Hi, I'm Ann DeLisi, the host of the Essential Conversations podcast series. This conversation is with Detroit neoclassical pianist Black Bach, who came home to perform at Willis Show Bar as a benefit for WDET. He wanted to celebrate Juneteenth and the release of his second full-length album titled Nine. We covered everything from the difficulties of touring as a pianist to mental health to some of his influences. Here's my interview with Black Bach.
Thank you so much for being here. You know, I think the last time we did anything similar to this was Susan Rogers, Prince's audio engineer, and she and I sat up here and talked about Prince for a couple of hours. But it's really nice to be back and to be doing an event in front of all of you and with this artist who I absolutely love. I just love him. And I know you love him too. So what Black Bach decided to do was start this week of doing an annual Juneteenth event in Detroit. And he and I talked about doing it here and having a conversation together. So this won't be a full-blown performance. It's going to be a lot of the two of us talking, and there's a lot to talk about. And some of it will be very serious, and we've got some lighthearted stuff fit into tonight that's going to be a lot of fun. But in the spirit of Juneteenth, I wanted to start with one of his pieces of music to commemorate this national holiday, finally. This is called What is Truth, and it was written for Juneteenth by Black Bach. Take a listen. Please welcome Black Bach.
It's a moment. I had a moment.
I guess you did. So does that happen often when you hear
it happened
the
then.
Music you created?
It happened then.
Well, I think it happened for a lot of us. What were you thinking when you wrote that? When did you write it?
I say about maybe 2 months ago.
Oh, it's pretty recent,
it's
huh?
It's pretty recent, yeah.
Yeah.
So I love Detroit because I always get to tell the real stories. Yeah. the real story is that I had a label deadline. Say it was Monday and the label deadline was Friday. And I started writing a piece and it was not good. Like it, by Friday, it's just a super rush job to get to the deadline. And I turned it into our good friend, Billy Mann. And he wrote me an email back and said, nah. So this piece originally, its original working title was, Nah, Son. So, you know, I gathered myself and what I did was I stayed in Florida, Ocala, Florida with my dad. And I went outside and I heard this bird sing this melody. And it became the melody for the chorus of this piece.
Wow.
I felt like it was a message saying, it was the bird was asking me the question, what is truth? And I just had to, and it just, I mean, the piece just kind of grew legs from that point.
So when you sent it to Billy, what did he say?
This is Black Bach. That's what he said. This is the stuff.
So the man we're talking about, Billy Mann, when I was at the River in the 90s, Billy Mann was an artist, and we were the only ones playing his music. And Black Bach can tell you how great of an artist Billy is, and he doesn't record anymore. And he became a manager. He's Black Bach's manager, and he became a high-level executive at EMI Records. And it was Billy who told me about Black Bach. He called me, and I don't hear from him for years unless it's really good. You know, like when you want, when you're going to tell your friends, you have to listen to something. Somebody, like if I was going to tell Don Was to listen to something, it better be good. So, And so he said, Black Box from Detroit. You got it. He's toured with John Mayer and Justin Timberlake and Rihanna and all these people. He was a child prodigy. He's incredible. And now he's going to be writing classical, original classical solo piano works. And I'm like, let me hear it. And he sent Black Book to me. And that was my first introduction. And I put it on the air right away. It was interesting because, you know, people don't expect you to put classical music on with everything else. But one thing that these pieces did for me, and it did for you, I know, just as you listen, it stops us for that moment. It demands our attention. And it was, you could have heard a pin drop in here. And so that's one of the things about classical music, and certainly a solo instrument like that. Yeah. Do you remember what it felt like when you were a kid, when you realized the power of being able to play like that and the kind of power that it had over the listener?
Yeah, I remember that exact moment.
Really?
Yeah, the exact moment. I was doing a recital and I was playing a Mozart sonata. It's pretty difficult for, you know, a kid. And I performed the piece, I stood up, I took my bow. I started to walk off stage, and as I was walking off, I went, phew. And exactly, that's what happened. Like a little eight-year-old kid going, phew, like, man, I got through that one. And I remember everyone laughed, and I went, oh my God, they felt what I felt. They knew it, we connected. And at that moment, I said, that connection is what I want for the rest of my life.
That's
being able
great.
To touch people.
That feeling of being up there alone is very different than being on stage with Justin Timberlake.
Oh, absolutely.
So with Justin Timberlake, you're in front of tens of thousands of people, mm-hmm. and you're part of a group to support that artist. I want you to talk about the difference in the feelings of that versus being behind a 9-foot grand piano and what that feels like to have that audience now as an accomplished artist, not as a kid, but as an accomplished artist, and what those two things have in common and how different that they are.
Definitely the difference is I love playing with bands and ensembles. Mm-hmm. I love it because it's more of like a camaraderie. Like you're, you know, everybody's kind of, you know, shoot a look. Oh, yeah, got you. Yeah, you know, ooh. You know, so everybody's kind of moving together, gelling at the same, you know, I always say we're rowing the same boat at the same time with mm-hmm. the same tempo.
Right.
But when you're alone, I think that there's a more personal connection. And I love that personal connection. I feel like everyone that's listening is having their own separate experience. Their mind, their heart, their soul is traveling in a way. And I'm just the catalyst. I'm just the guy that's connecting them to everything else that exists within the world or in the universe. And they're able to relive a memory or create a new memory or, you know, whatever it is. You know, I think that it leaves the open palette for the listener to really, really, really make their own narrative. And I think that's the super, super connection that happens. I am just the person with two covers, the front cover, the back cover. You make the story.
I want to go back to Juneteenth because mm-hmm. that's why you're here.
Yes.
And you played at the Cube last night. Uh-huh. And of course, you're here doing this for us tonight. And this is going to be an annual event.
Yes.
So we're going to be able to see, yeah. mark your calendars for a year from now. You'll be able to see Black Box perform again. As you've traveled this year, the past year, we hear Juneteenth more. There's more of a recognition of it, certainly now that it's a federal holiday. Have you felt that? What does it feel like as you navigate the world, certainly in the United States? What does that feel like now? Yeah.
It feels, this is the first year that it really feels real. Mm. Like the previous years, it's been, you know, we're getting into the mode of it actually being a holiday.
Right.
You know, I went and parked. I went to one of our favorite breakfast spots on Woodward. And when I parked, I went, I wonder why it's not paying this meter. Oh, Juneteenth. Yeah. You know, so it's finally beginning to really settle in. And now it's, you know, I think that the recognition as an American holiday is finally getting into, it's settling in.
Yeah. Just earlier today, I came here for sound check and Black Box said, oh, I have these pieces, these sort of like interludes that are going to be part of the new album, right?
Yes.
And I would like to play one of those, at least a couple of them. But this one is called Racism in a Better Way. These are like a minute and 40 seconds. And these will be interspersed in the album. So this is track two.
Yes, there is a better way. Anger, for us as a culture, is a default emotion. Because anger gives us a sense of power, a sense of control. However, anger is an umbrella emotion for fear, for shame, for powerlessness, hopelessness. We've never had time to really just sit with our emotions and figure them out. Thankfully, we are getting to that place where we are getting congruent in our emotional state. We are understanding. No, I'm not angry. I am terrified. I am literally terrified to be Black in this country. And that's honest truth for all of us, African American males especially. We know, I mean, we'd like to sing Kumbaya, and I really would love a world like that. Unfortunately, we have not yet created it. So yes, there's a better way. And the better way to deal with racism is to understand what you can do about it. My thought is to rise above it. The ignorance of racism is exactly that. It's ignorant. And how we overcome it is we just be better than better. We be ourselves. We've always been programmed since children. Whatever you do, you got to do it better. And that's the best you can do, is just not be who they think you are.
It's really something. Did you write those words?
No.
See, that was you on the piano, of course.
That was me on the piano, but...
Who wrote those words?
That is my therapist.
Really?
Yes.
How about that?
Her name is Felicia Thomas. That's Dr. Felicia Thomas. And she is such an insightful, wise person. I always say she's the auntie that we all wish we had. I mean, she's from Oakland, and she's like, you know, like she's attitude.
Right.
But she gives you what you need, the knowledge, the wisdom, you know. And literally, I just got on a Zoom with her, and I said, all right, talk. And she riffed and riffed and riffed, and that's what came.
So she's part of your new album.
She is definitely part of my new album.
That's pretty great.
I felt that it was important for me to share the insights that I had.
Everyone. How did she feel about, did she say yes right away?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Totally supportive of my career.
That's so great.
Yeah.
How did you find her?
At the beginning, before there was Black Bloc, I had just left LA. I had went through a really bad breakup and I needed to kind of put myself back together.
Mm-hmm.
So I found her online. And she reminded me of my sister. So I said, oh, let's try it out. And the first session, she asked me the most important question that I think you can ask any human being, which is, who are you? And I said, oh, I'm a pianist. And I do it. She said, no, that's what you do. Who are you? And we set out to figure out and get answers to that question. And when we finally did, my world changed. My life changed. I understood that my purpose on this planet is to be of service. My purpose is to inspire. Yeah.
You're doing a good job of it. All right, now we're going to move on to something somewhat mundane. So on Sunday, I get an email that says, hi, Ann, Black Box piano was damaged on its way to Detroit. And I thought, why is this happening on Sunday? So first thing I thought, I don't know why. And so then the challenge of getting the keyboard, which was delivered today at 3:00, by the way. This is not Black Box piano.
No, it is not.
And so then I started thinking about it. Like, if you're a guitarist, it's kind of easy to get a guitar. You carry it with you. When you play a piano, it's not so easy. So I saw on your Instagram, he called out everybody that's destroyed his pianos. All the people, the airline, the other people, yeah. You know, that have. So I started thinking about how, what a challenge that is to be a pianist and have to travel with this instrument and that you have to kind of give it over. How often does this happen that you, that something gets destroyed?
Almost every time I put it on an airplane.
Seriously?
At this point, yeah. It's pretty frequent.
So you have to, you're always paying to get your, how many keyboards do you have?
Well, I thought I had two, but now I think I'm down to zero. I don't know. I don't actually know at this point. Whatever.
You don't know where it is?
It's somewhere. If you see it, tell it I said hello.
All right. I want to move on to your influences. Yeah. And then you're going to play a full song for us. Okay. So this is Thelonious Monk. I want you to hear Thelonious Monk, and then I'm going to have Black Bach talk about why he loves this artist so much, why he was so influential, and what exactly it is that we're listening to. Because the thing about Thelonious Monk's music, you feel a little bit like, I don't feel quite centered. Mm-hmm. It's just a little bit off, but it's the absolute most fascinating thing to listen to. So, Connor, let's listen to this. I mean, especially off the top. And then he goes into, like, there's a lot of stuff happening there. Then you feel a little bit more like, okay, I got this. And then even more so. It's absolutely fascinating. So tell me why his approach to music influenced you so much.
I think Thelonious's influence is all based in revolution. It was music the way that he wanted it, not the way anyone else wanted it. You know, this is my voice. My voice is going to be, yeah, it's uneasy. So what? You know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing that I'm most intrigued about Thelonious Monk is his use of dissonance and harmony and how he can actually, you know, he takes the ear and he kind of twists it a little bit, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that that's such a cool thing. I know as composers, what we like to do is we're storytellers. And I think if his story was, especially in a time of bebop, like,
right.
you know, it was about, you know, cabaret cards and, you know, fighting the police and not getting arrested and playing music the way that you wanted to. So he's one of the best examples of it.
All right. So that's a very different approach to playing than classical music is.
In some ways,
say?
Yes and no.
Depending
on what it is.
What composer
yeah.
it is.
Yeah.
Do you remember what it felt like the first time you heard him?
Yeah, what the hell is this? I think as we all did. But then I loved how unique he was. And to me, that is what makes a musician a musician. Is there's no other. Nobody right. sounds like that. Only right. he sounds like that, you know.
All right, I wanted to get to another big influence on you.
Okay.
And that is Florence Beatrice Price.
Yeah.
African-American composer. Who wrote over 300 pieces. And I want to make sure everybody knows who she is. And I want you to talk a little bit about it. Oh, actually, before we do that, can you play track 6?
Thank you.
So one of the composers I thought of when I heard that was John Williams. And I asked you about that earlier today. Yeah. I thought, oh, I hear that connection.
Yeah.
That is from your favorite symphony that she composed,
yes.
Symphony No. 3 in C minor.
Yeah,
that was the fourth movement. When you discovered, so were you playing her music when you were a kid?
No, it wasn't until I was
later?
An adult that I figured out, that I discovered her and immediately fell in love.
It's just an amazing story.
Yeah.
So I kind of started to go down the rabbit hole after I saw you talking about her. I thought, oh my gosh, we should all know about how amazing she is.
Yeah. Even just listening to that, I mean, it hits me right in the heart.
Yeah.
It sounds like the Black experience in America during that time.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it sounds like to me. Great storyteller.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you are now in a position where you are starting to influence other people yourself as an artist, kids in particular. Because let's be fair, and Blackbach and I have talked about this. If you saw him walking down the street, you wouldn't say, oh, classical pianist, for sure.
No way ever.
That doesn't happen. And you get that all the time. We've certainly talked about that. It's certainly a way in for kids to say, oh, look at that guy. And I remember asking Blackbach at one of our interviews, it was at the church, and I said, why should kids play classical music? And he said, because it's fun. And I never forgot that because I thought it is fun. I mean, I played classical music when I was a kid too, and there is nothing like it. What are kids starting to say to you about being a classical musician, and what do they think about what you're doing?
They are just, you know, one of the wonderful things that happens is after I play a show, and if they're in the crowd, they kind of walk up to me and they do this. like it's this, it's, and you know, I have to kind of come down to their level and say, hey, what's up? You play piano? Yeah. You want to keep playing? Yeah. Well, you know, you have to keep practicing. Okay. And they get excited about practicing. That's one of the things that I want to do is make sure they're excited about learning more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that's the biggest thing for me is to influence the trajectory. Knowing that, it's going to suck some days, but you keep going.
You and I talked earlier today about the responsibility of celebrity and how some people think they do have a responsibility and others don't. And how do you feel about it for yourself?
Absolutely. You have to be responsible. You're in front of people and they're looking at you. Not only are they looking at what you're doing, but they're looking at who you are. And I think that's the important thing, is to make sure that who you are is best represented and you're giving them something that they can look at and say, I can be like that. That's so important, is to let them know that it is possible. You know,
right.
So I think that's like one of the most important things is making sure that I always represent myself in a way that inspires.
Thank you for doing that. All right, I think it's time to put you to work. I was going to request either The Hustle is Real or Amalia's Ocean.
Okay, I'll do Amalia.
Song gets me every time. Oh my gosh. It's one of the most beautiful songs I've ever heard. I was on your Instagram and I saw something that had not occurred to me until I saw it, which was you watching somebody play your music because all of your music is originally written by you.
Right.
There was a young woman who was playing Michelle's first day at the White House, right?
Yes.
Watching you watch her was so great.
I mean, just wow. Just, this is the only thing I can, it's mind numbing Wow.
Because that was the first time.
That was literally the first time I've ever heard anyone else play my composition. Like, wow.
That was pretty great.
In a way, it made it real. It made it very real in that moment.
How'd she do?
She killed it. She was great.
That was pretty great. Well, if you go on Black Box Instagram, you will see him collaborating with everybody, every genre. You had an accordion player. I don't know what you guys were playing, but it was pretty crazy. I mean, he's had, and Black Box does play accordion a little bit. But watching him, like, he'll take like popular songs and put a classical accompaniment to it, and you're like, how does that even work? And it works. So when you're listening to a piece of music that you didn't write, does it just happen? Are you, is it a conscious thing, or is it something that really just comes out of you?
When I listen to, it's this weird thing that happens to me when I listen to music. It's like my mind is tearing it apart as it's going. Imagine that something's going by, and as it's going by, someone's going, and they're slinking it out. So they're like, the drums are here, they're in, the snare's doing this. The car, like, the arrangement just kind of like expands. And then when the arrangement expands, especially like on a pop song, it may not be a lot of information, but the fact that there's not a lot of information shows me exactly where the holes and the gaps are, where the music can do other things and where it can make turns and shifts within just something that's very simple, maybe one chord, but the rhythm and the way it's presented allows for this next, you know, this next layer of creation. So, yeah, it's a really weird.
Well, I'm gonna think about that next time I'm watching you do that. I mean, that is really remarkable. Have you had anybody famous? Because you've done this with like some really big songs. Has anybody ever written to you or said, "Oh, I heard you putting an accompaniment on my song"?
Yeah, a couple. Yeah, a couple of there's this artist in New Orleans, Big Frida. She responds. Another artist's name is Guabdad 3000. He responded.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been a good response. There've been a couple of really cool ones.
So let's talk about collaborations, because these are collaborations of sorts. But when Tina Turner passed, she was the one that got away. She was somebody you wanted to collaborate with. Talk about her influence on you.
It's the day she passed, I put a post out, and I just remember being in my room here on the West Side, and just, I had a cassette tape of Private Dancer, and I played that tape until it completely was destroyed. Like, I played it over and over and over and over again. There was something very interesting and intriguing about not just her voice, but just the way that she approached music. I always say that Tina had another gear. Like, everybody would have, you know, 1 through 4. Tina would have 5, and then every once in a while, like on the chorus of Private Dancer, when she goes really up, she goes 6. And you're like, whoa, you're like, I'm a private dancer. Like, oh my God, it's mind-numbing. So she was always a super influence, and that was the first time I heard any music and said, I want to play that stuff professionally. I will say that I'm very blessed to have toured with Rihanna, because she's very much that type of musician, like with another gear.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, it's a safe bet that no one in this room is going to tour with her. So I wanted you to, you to talk a little bit about what that's like and what she was like and what it's like to tour on a grand scale like that.
Oh man, the ultimate rock star.
Yeah.
The ultimate rock star, but humble and sweet and, you know, a little menacing. She and I have had some moments where, you know, we laugh at it now, but it was really serious in that moment. Really quickly, she cursed me out in a prayer circle.
She did?
For something I didn't even do. Just going like, what are you talking about, man? She's like, I saw you, Charles, I saw you. I'm like, no, you didn't. And then the guitar player is going, that was me. So yeah, you know, it's always an amazing thing to be out with an artist on that grand scale. The audiences are, I mean, enamored. They're mega fans. I mean, to see that type of production come together is absolutely
Let's talk awesome. About a production like that coming together.
Yeah.
Because again, we don't really know what that looks like. But from the time she hires you to do this, mm-hmm. how does the information start to get to you as to what's going to be expected of you, and then rehearsals, mm-hmm. and then finally getting on the road? What kind of time frame are we talking about, and how do you know exactly what she wants?
It usually starts with, it's about a 2-month time frame. Usually talk to the musical director. They send you, you know, whatever album is currently mm-hmm. getting ready to be released or whatever. Usually with watermarks, you know, like little sounds on them whatever. John Mayer's was a horse. So every time I listen to the Battle Studies album, I miss that horse that it hits at like 2 minutes on every song. But they send you the audio. You learn as much as you can. You get into rehearsals and rehearse with just the band for about 2 or 3 weeks. And then it goes into like a full production rehearsal. And then like all the pieces start getting put together, dance and pyro and lights and cameras and everything else. And then at the end of it, you have 4 terrible shows. First 4 shows are always awful. And then the 5th or 6th one clicks. Yeah. And from that point, the tour is on full steam.
That's pretty cool. Who do you want to work with? Who's on your bucket list there?
Okay, so there's this there's this amazing artist. His name is Andreas Vollenweider.
Oh, I know who that is.
Yeah, he's an electroacoustic harpist.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And he is my most favorite musician on the planet.
And does he know about you?
No, but I so wish he did.
Well, well, this can't be that hard.
Oh, my gosh.
That's got to happen.
Oh, my gosh. It would be a dream come true.
Another collaboration you did that I don't know if anybody in this room knows about that blew me away was your collaboration with an astronaut in space working with NASA.
Yes.
So can you talk a little bit about this? This was so cool.
Yeah, super cool. Kid from the West Side. Collaboration with an astronaut in space? How? So I wrote this piece, Stars Ad Astra. And I think I wrote it back in like 2017. Mm-hmm. It was an older piece. And just so happens that my manager also manages astronauts, which I didn't know they had managers, to my surprise. But she happens to manage Commander Michael Lopez Alegría. And we met and we hit it off. I've always been a very big fan of NASA and space and stars. And so he said, I remember he emailed me and he said, hey man, can you send me that song? And I sent him the song. He says, yeah, I think I'm going to put it on the playlist for the mission. And I went, ooh. And maybe a couple days later, he said, you know what? I play a little bit of piano. Let's make a moment out of this. And from that moment, he flew up to the ISS, strapped himself down, and played. Luckily, there was a keyboard on the International Space Station. That's so cool.
Can you play a little bit of this? Is Ad Astra, right?
Stars Ad Astra. Yeah.
Stars, yeah. That was pretty great.
Yeah.
You get bragging rights for that collaboration. Yeah, big time. I wouldn't have, if you and I were doing this interview 2 months ago, I wouldn't even ask you about this. But now I'm going to ask you what you think about AI.
I think the audience has spoken. Ooh, scary stuff. I think it's a great tool. I have used it before. I use AI for the cover to my Chill Music Volume 1.
Right. Which, by the way, is so beautiful. it deserves more attention, yeah. I have to say. It's Chill Music Volume 1. It's five songs.
Five songs.
And it's really lovely. Like, if you want something to put on Sunday morning, this is what you want. So sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, no.
I had to get a little plug for your EP there.
Yeah, thanks.
So AI.
Yeah. AI. Great tool. I believe that if we are creating art at a level that expresses a deeper sense of who we are as humans, it's very difficult. And I will go as far as saying impossible for AI to create or mimic. You know, there's a certain way that if I play or perform, that's different every time. And there are mistakes at certain points. AI doesn't know to make the mistake.
Right.
You know, and how to recover from the mistake. Mm-hmm. So I think as long as we are continue being as human as we can, AI won't get close.
Nice. Okay, what does practicing look like?
Horrible. It's a terrible thing.
Let's see what it looks like.
See what it looks like.
It's all over that. Do you do that every day? That you have access to a keyboard?
Yes, I do start off with warm-ups.
Absolutely.
Every day I have access. But, you know, going into the process of practicing is a better illustration is this. Okay. Yeah.
I just want to let everybody know that I did warn Black Bach that I was going to do this. So I don't know if anybody's ever done this to you before, but I think maybe not. I was walking through the crowd tonight and I was asking certain people to tell me the first word that came to their mind. And I started writing them down and I came up with two song titles out of these random words. And Black Bach has to compose a song.
This is going to be a train wreck.
Here's the title. Black Bach wrote a disco symphony for a cute found dog.
What?
I think it's a great title.
I think it needs some editing.
Okay. Black Bach wrote a disco symphony. Okay, here's the next one.
Oh my God, there's more.
There is more. This will be the last one, though. All right, this is Love for a Vibey, Exciting Piano Made of Gin.
Made of, like.
Love for a Vibey, Exciting Piano Made of Gin.
Like, gin? Like, yeah. On the ball? Oh, it's drunk, too?
Yeah. It's no disco ball, my friend.
It's drunk in love.
Okay. There you go.
Fun.
Next time I'm going to suggest it. He's going to go, you know what? I want you to come up with a different idea, sister.
Yeah.
So here's what I really want to do. Okay. I want you to play a couple songs back to back.
Okay.
And then I'm going to come back up. And then we're going to take some questions from the audience.
Okay.
And I think we'll close with one final, some final words from your therapist.
Okay.
So please welcome once again, Black Buck. You know, Questlove wrote a book a couple years ago, and in it, he talked about how he was like concerned about creativity and people being creative because in order to be creative, you have to be willing to be bored, you have to be willing to be quiet, and you have to be willing to be disengaged from everything else. And he said, we don't live in a society that says it's okay to do all those things. You have to be quiet and bored and all those things, right? For all of it to come.
It's amazing. If you follow me on Instagram, every once in a while in my story, you'll see that, you know, the icon that when you get on the plane, you put it on airplane mode. Mm-hmm. You'll see just me. I'll post just that icon and I say like flight number practicing or flight number working on something. Mm-hmm. I love airplane mode. I cut out the whole world. Matter of fact, my girlfriend, I send her the airplane emoji and she knows, oh, he's going up. He's going up, don't bother him. And she'll text me, hey, see you when you come back down. And it may be, like I said, 15 minutes and sometimes it may be 5 or 6 hours.
Well, thank you for being willing to be bored for us.
Yeah.
That interview with Black Buck took place on June 20th, 2023 at Willis Show Bar in Detroit. Find him at blackbuck.com. To hear other essential conversations, visit WDET.org. I'm Ann DeLisi.